Welcome to They Did It, your official source for information on conspiracies, bizarre beliefs, and the unexplained, with your hosts, Brian Bonner and Jack Hanley. Jack is a historian and folklorist, whose academic milieus include Central and Eastern European history, modern European history, European and American folklorists, and contemporary urban folklore. Brian has investigated paranormal claims for over 20 years and is trained in many related fields, including psychology, electronics, influence and deception detection, hypnosis, and audio analysis. He leads talks and lectures on critical thinking, paranormal investigations, historical research, digital imaging, and supernatural claims analysis. Continue at your own risk. Take us down the rabbit hole, boys.
In our first segment, we journey back to a nondescript evening in March of 2009, when television viewers would encounter what should have been a rather mundane new programming venture within the History Channel lineup, a special two-hour documentary concerning the technological achievements of our ancient ancestors and their most impressive civilizations. However, from the opening salvo, it became radically clear that this documentary, which would later launch a flagship series for the celebrated cable channel, offered a very different take on the History Channel's once proud legacy of academic rigor and high historical and scientific standards. In this one infamous and ignorant endorsement of the much maligned pseudoscientific ancient astronauts hypothesis, the History Channel would forever be tied to a nefarious, irrational, and explicitly racist ideology which purports that most, if not all, of our early and mostly non-white ancestors' achievements in architecture, science, and technology were not, in fact, the cultural culmination of centuries of shared knowledge and ingenuity, but rather to be the work of, you guessed it, aliens. Join us on this episode as we take on the ancient aliens conspiracy theory on the They Did It podcast.
My name is Giorgio Tsoukalos. I explore the world that exists between reality and speculation, the known and the unknown. What we've been taught by mainstream scholars is not the whole picture. But I'm convinced that every day we are one step closer to the truth.
Welcome, everybody, to this episode of They Did It, a conspiracy podcast. So, Brian, this episode is, I know, a subject that's very near and dear to our hearts in terms of getting very passionate about in our private whiskey-fueled conversations of the past. This has come up quite a bit, so I was very excited that this was selected as one of our topics to discuss, and that is, of course, the ancient aliens conspiracy theory. And so to kick us off, let's turn to you real quick. And why don't you give our listeners an overview of exactly what this conspiracy theory consists of?
That's an awfully big question to ask. the answer is basically the conspiracy is if someone perceives that something in the past couldn't have been done technologically, it must be aliens. I mean, in a nutshell, that's it. Now, I know we're going to go down this rabbit hole a little farther, but I think another way that you can look at it is if there were no white people in the area and there happened to be brown people in the area, they wouldn't have been smart enough. So it had to be aliens. The racism runs deep in these.
Absolutely.
So, you know, in a really small nutshell, that's kind of what it is, because it's there are so many conspiracies wrapped up inside of this one concept.
It's absolutely shocking. So what we'll do is, like, I'd love to talk a little bit about maybe like some of the history of what we will term for this podcast pseudo-archaeology a bit, and then kind of get up to a foundational point with a very famous book that then I'll turn it back over to you to discuss, that really is a major catalyst point for most of this, of the modern context of this conspiracy theory. And then for our listeners, we will then delve into a couple of the more popular asserted moments of alien contact regarding ancient civilizations, and kind of just look at the nuances of the historical legacy of those as well. So let me just start off, Brian, with the term itself and the debate surrounding the proper nomenclature. There really wasn't a major delineation from the traditional archaeology term until the academic William Steibing in 1987 published a wonderful academic paper entitled The Nature and Dangers of Cult Archaeology. So that's kind of like a gauntlet drop, right? That really tries to discredit the genre itself. And then there's a later push in the 2000s toward a more gentle and dubious label of alternative archaeology by its followers. And in the age of Trump, Brian, does that sound like an attempt at equivocation, right? Is that a familiar
The thing? Word alternative just scares me all the time, because anytime it's an alternative anything, a little red flag goes off somewhere.
Right? It should absolutely go up. But personally, my favorite remains the late, great Glenn Daniels term. For our listeners, that's the famed longtime editor of the journal Antiquity, who quite publicly favored the term bullshit archaeology. This falls in line with a quote from the aforementioned Steibing, who famously wrote that there were certain terms used for pseudo-archaeology that were heard, quote, in the privacy of professional archaeologists' homes and offices, but which cannot be mentioned in polite society. So for the purpose of our podcast, I assert, Brian, that we're being very generous even in using pseudo-archaeology as a label, right?
I don't think the word archaeology needs to be anywhere in any of these descriptions. Inclusion jumping, confirmation bias, psychosis. There's a lot of things, but no, archaeology is not one of them.
Oh, yeah. It's so true. And, you know, whatever the label, it's important here to note that from an academic context, and this is for our listeners too, the applied definition of pseudo-archaeology or pseudo-history or pseudo-science, for that matter, does not technically refer just to the controversial and mostly fantastical ideas and assertions. I mean, Brian, you know as well as I do that within academia, there's always highly contested controversial assertions. But it's rather referring to the methodology employed to make the claims. Or in this case, not
lack thereof.
Yeah, exactly. Not actually employed when making their claim. So in other words, we're using this label not to describe the absurd ideas themselves, but rather the practice of engaging in the pseudosciences as they were. So one thing we want to just share to our listeners before we turn it back over to you to discuss the main catalyst point is that given all the variance between the many genres here of the pseudosciences, they all share some essential fundamental characteristics. So namely a declared and often fierce opposition to the academic field that they're operating in. Secondly, a motivation, whether intentional or not, to try to push an ideology, which is often in this particular case, religious or nationalistic. And lastly, and perhaps most importantly, the failure to employ the scientific method. That's our big one, right? It's namely, instead of testing and then peer reviewing the evidence to prove a hypothesis, pseudoscientists cherry pick and attempt to mold the archaeological data or scientific data, as it were, to fit a presupposed conclusion that supports their existing narrative. So
absolutely,
that's our big one here that we really want to make sure we're explaining to our viewers how we're coming at this initially from a scientific and rational standpoint. You give talks on this all the time. And for any of our listeners that ever get the amazing opportunity to be in our neck of the woods and get to see Brian do one of his amazing talks out there in the public lecture circuit, I highly recommend it. It's just absolutely fantastic. But just bringing us back up to our big context of this, attempts to try to employ pseudo-archaeology to fit a nationalist or religious ideology go back as far as the second century. But what I will speak of right before I turn it over to you, Brian, here is what I think is one of the most important modern touch points is the cult of the figure Ignatius Donnelly, who is just a fascinating historical figure. He's a 19th century congressman. He's a writer and pseudoscientist who's actually known for originating a whole host of absurd fringe conspiracies. So among them, the idea of the lost civilization of Atlantis theory, flood catastrophe conspiracies, and even the Shakespearean authorship conspiracy. So I personally have a lot of bones to pick with him. But his most notable and influential work for our discussion is Atlantis, the Antediluvian World, which is published in 1882, which he asserts that Plato's originally metaphorical account of Atlantis was actually historically factual. And he suggests that all known ancient civilizations are descended from this lost civilization, and that Atlantis was the original seat of the Aryan or Indo-European family of nations, which is going to be a theme that we come back to later, right? So it's like, it was kind of like the first major work that across the world began this important catalyst for this idea of pseudo-archaeology, specifically the ancient aliens theory, which is itself just this blended idea of like folk magic and pseudo-history and spiritualism and colonial racism, all that synthesize into this worldview of lost master races and lost continents. And of course, as you pointed out earlier, mostly fair-skinned original civilizations who either came from or had access to other worlds.
And which, I have a bit of a follow-up on that.
Yeah.
So now I'm holding that for later.
Oh, okay. So this takes us right up to the book, as we will call it here, and that I'd love to turn over and get your thoughts about. This is a book which shockingly has sold now over 65 million copies to date.
That's right.
It passed its major anniversary date. Brian, could you tell us a bit about Chariots of the Gods?
Yeah, sure. The thing about Chariots of the Gods, written by Eric von Daniken, it posed all of the aliens probably did it theories, which it kind of was destructive in a way of not giving people in the past the credit of being, I won't say technologically advanced, but creative enough to do things as simple as cut a rock move a stone. And a lot of these theories that were posed in it, some of the things that I really ask is, you know, for example, they gave us drawings of spaceships. Why? And that's kind of what it boils down to, all of these different things that were supposedly these technologically advanced societies were giving us these things. But, you know, what was the motivation? Why didn't they just hand over a manual so we could go instantly into the electronic age instead of teach us how to pile rocks on top of each other?
Right.
And, you know, it's not that I really want to pick on von Daniken, but it's...
I kind of think you do, and we should.
Well, it's pretty easy. I mean, he has a very sordid past of prison time, of just, he actually wrote the first book while he was in jail. It was for embezzlement while he was working at a hotel. And one of the things that I think really starts this whole part of our conversation, you know, into motion, is the fact that when he was writing this first book, they wanted the book reworked. The publisher wasn't really feeling his writing. So they hired an author. This author, who wrote under the pseudonym of Wilhelm Roggensdorf, was a very famous Nazi best-selling author. Ugh. So he was ghostwritten literally by a Nazi. I mean, there's no good way to put it. But the thing that I found interesting, and I don't know if you know about this, is pre-von Daniken, back in the 1800s, there was a... how can I put this? A trend of making science fiction books that the hero, the great superhero of the book, was Thomas Edison.
Huh.
And one book in particular that came out in 1898 was called Edison's Conquest of Mars.
I have heard of this.
In Edison's Conquest of Mars, he absolutely says, A, Mars was inhabited by giants. They came down to help straighten up the Earth. Even went into the point of saying that they built the pyramids and that the face on the Sphinx was actually a Martian. So it turns out that von Daniken really, let's say, borrowed a lot from this book from 1898.
Wow.
So what he wrote wasn't necessarily anything new, but it was new to the crowd.
Sure.
And it just kind of went on from there. You know, he wrote this book, it comes out, and 2 years later, there's a movie, which is a massive hit at the time and kept getting re-released. I mean, it was originally released in 1970, and I remember seeing this movie at the drive-in. And in 1970, I would not remember seeing a movie at a drive-in.
This was shown in schools as, like, educational later on.
Absolutely. And from there, it kind of, you know, he wrote more and more books. He formed more and more conspiracies, more and more pseudo-archaeology, as we like to say. And it branched off from there. One of the things that I thought was kind of interesting, are you familiar with his book called Signs of the Gods?
Yes. And there he really kind of, and I'll let you tell this, but there he kind of really reveals a lot of his more nefarious ideologies, right?
Oh, he did. And I'll make a quote from it. So I make sure I'm quoting him and not myself. He said, "Was the black race a failure, and did extraterrestrials change the genetic code by gene surgery and then program a white or yellow race?"
Yeah.
So, wow. I can't even believe that's real.
Right. And, you know, and you said it perfectly here too, Brian, because people don't realize that this isn't just a fringe book here. This is quite literally why we have what used to be the History Channel basically doing series like Ancient Aliens, and why. I mean, it's just this constant retelling. A big theme we always have here on They Did It podcast is how much of these conspiracies, modern conspiracies anyway, are just recycled themes from earlier, mostly racist or nationalistic, right, ideologies, and they just keep getting refurbished again for a new generation. But right. People realize how influential this book. Like everything, if you watch that television show with our wild-haired protagonist claiming that aliens have done everything, it literally comes from this book and from its influence.
Well, and some of the things that I find interesting about that is, you know, even the experts that are involved in it, if they are truly experts, tend to claim after the fact, you know, it's like, hey, these guys took me completely out of context.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, and as I've found out in the past, it's one of the penalties of throwing yourself at the media is you've got to be really careful what you say, how you say it, and sometimes you just don't go at all. I mean, honestly, if Ancient Aliens, the producers called me and said, "Do you want to be on the show?" No. I just could not do it.
Well, of course, even for the right reasons, right? Lending your
exactly.
expertise to something nefarious.
Exactly. And, you know, unfortunately, it's become a huge issue with everybody wants to be on it because, you know, it's not even Ancient Aliens anymore. It's a UFO show.
Right, right.
I mean,
a popular one, right? It gets viewership.
Yeah, I mean, it started off and it was the whole Ancient Aliens conspiracy. And just like most reality TV shows, you know, the first couple of seasons, they ran out of stuff. So they've got to keep adding, which is kind of how the books go on, too.
Right. Sure. And how many incarnations, like how many books has he written at this point?
You know, I don't know.
I mean, it's got a number into like, you know, at least 50 plus, right?
No,
I mean, that's what I mean. It's prolific.
Yeah, it just keeps going.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of a cookie cutter thing, too. It's like, okay, what thing out there is unexplained at the time and in the past, and I'll stick an alien in it. That's really what it comes down to, is, you know, just, and it's not always things that haven't been explained. Unfortunately,
yeah, that's a frustrating thing, isn't it? It's really just how uneducated we are.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Unfortunately, the general public isn't educated in a lot of these different fields for good reason. It's not something that, you know, they'd normally study. But when you have some guy come up and go, oh, yeah, but did you know? Well, now it becomes that special knowledge that people like to know. Sure. So they become interested in it. Whereas before, they could care less. But now that there's an alien involved.
Well, sure. Yeah.
I can kind of take this to an example here. Yes. Let's talk about the pyramids. Because
well, absolutely. And right before we jump into that point, let me just also make one quick thing for our listeners as well that we want to make as a point. And I know when we were first crafting this, we wanted to discuss, as we then jump into some specific examples, first among them, the pyramids of Egypt. And that is, you did this perfect segue by bringing up the racial themes, right? And I think it's imperative that we specifically dissect these underlying themes and ideologies behind this theory. And that is that I think we tend to view this as a very harmless, fun thing, much like, you know, astrology, but far from being innocuous. These alien theories essentially undermine almost exclusively the agency and intellect of non-European cultures in Africa and South America and indigenous societies in North America by essentially erasing their historical and cultural achievements. And this is where this then becomes quite serious, as you just brought up.
Absolutely. I think
there's a great quote by historian Chris Riddell, and he says, quote, "That's what the ancient aliens theory does. It discredits the origins of civilizations, almost entirely of non-white civilizations. People will always suggest, you know, that pyramids were built by aliens, but do they ever suggest the Roman Forum or the Parthenon? No, right?
Exactly.
So for our purposes, this is why for me, and I know you feel the same way, it's essential that as, you know, as people in the public eye, as skeptics and lecturers and academics, we have to do everything in our power with our own voices and agency to counteract this nefarious narrative, which many, again, view as a harmless dalliance with fantasy. But we're literally denying, when we indulge that, we deny a non-Western civilization their accomplishments and, I mean, and their legacy for it. So again, we say to those who find it harmless fun indulging in the History Channel's Ancient Alien series or to pass along books like Chariots of the Gods, just to understand that attributing the achievements of the forerunners of darker skinned peoples to aliens who do not exist because it seems out of the realm of your sensibilities to believe they could have achieved it themselves is not only woefully ignorant and, you know, uneducated, but it is undeniably racist. And we really want to make that assertion as we start looking at these individual cases and why it's so important to us.
You know, it's interesting because I've had a lot of people ask me, they're like, okay, what's the next show going to be about? And I'll start talking to them about it and say, you will not believe how just overtly racist these theories are. And they're like, because of aliens? And I'm like, no, the aliens are just a byproduct of it. Right, it doesn't really have anything to do with the aliens. It's the aliens are better than these people, so they had to have done it.
Exactly. So it's, yeah, we're coming with I know that this is why we're both very passionate in our historical bent of why this is so important. So we just really want to lay that down for our listeners of why we feel we are compelled, not only for this episode, but do whatever we can, being in the public sphere, and for you to take your knowledge and education and go out and try to dispel this when you come across it. So
absolutely.
That being said, let's jump into... We have probably three of the big three that are often attributed to alien contact within this theory. Let's discuss the pyramids.
Well, you know, built by aliens.
So that's the end of the show. We appreciate everyone coming.
Exactly. Well, and you know, there are so many conspiracies around that because, you know, the other one is that it was built by slaves. And
right.
The strange thing is some of the oldest records that exist actually show what was happening during, especially like the building of the Great Pyramid.
That's right.
They actually ended up with I'm trying to think what I'd call it, a logbook.
Yeah, yeah.
Of a guy that was in charge of a team of several hundred men 4,500 years ago. They found the effect of pay stubs. I mean, these were not, they were hard worked. Don't get me wrong. It's not something you would really want to do, but these were people that were getting paid to do their jobs. There were supervisors, not these, you know, horrible people beating them. It was just, it was kind of the thing to do. It wasn't a slavery operation, but at the same time, you have the, well, but the aliens did it. And that goes back to my previous one of anytime you look at a claim of any kind, you have to ask yourself, A, what's the motivation? Why would aliens have traversed, you know, hundreds of light years to come over and show us how to stack rocks?
Exactly.
What's the point? We may not have been as good at it before, but we've stacked rocks before. We've seen that happen. So how does that work? Why do people assume that's the only explanation? Some of the other things, some of the cuttings that were done in and around Egypt, they say things like, well, we've looked at it and it had to have been done by lasers. I actually read an entire conspiracy that everything that was ever cut in the past was done by a laser. And why? We had technology that could do that.
Right.
We've had amazing stonemasons and people that could just do amazing work. And it didn't require the intervention of somebody from another planet, or B, somebody from another culture. These cultures were not advanced in the way that we look at being advanced, but they were advanced enough that they had the ability to do things maybe other cultures couldn't. I mean, honestly, while, you know, somebody in Egypt was, you know, doing these amazing things with stone, maybe somebody on the other side of the world hadn't discovered how to do that yet. There's nothing that says on a timeline you have to have these specific steps to become a good stonemason.
No, exactly. And, you know, we always tend to default, right? That's a very human primal thing that we tend to just resort to this very non-rational, like linear way that we think that the world has to work involving the evolution of technology, right? It has to be this singular linear step that goes through. And we're so prone to that. And it just discredits so many different things in nature. And what you're referring to there was the papyrus logbooks of the Diary of Murrer.
Exactly.
Which are just, yeah. And by the way, can I just say this for you and our listeners that that's like the smoking gun, right? That just immediately puts to rest anything about this theory whatsoever. And I love that this great, long-debated, imagined mystery is finally punctured by, like, this very mundane bureaucratic record book, right?
Yeah, the company kept records, therefore no aliens.
It's just like the company logbook that we managed to find and then just, and does this. And so I think that's marvelous. But, you know, you also said the other thing, too, and that's we have this very incorrect and ridiculous notion, I think, sometimes of how long in our timeline we developed and evolved into this area. I mean, it's like it's probably around like 300,000 years ago that we first see evidence of modern Homo sapiens and the development within the fossil record of what we would maybe deem comparatively normal looking or comparable skull size to what we have right now, right? So, of course, because brains matter doesn't fossilize, but skeletons do, some of our best ways that we archaeologists and anthropologists can try to infer about the idea of intelligence within our ancestors and our earlier civilizations is by looking at skull size. And what I think people don't realize is our skull size has been the same in human beings for a long time, at least 100,000 years. And when you look at that comparatively, the Great Pyramid itself is just 4,500 years old.
Right.
So this idea that humans, you know, like this is just humans have had the same brain power long before pyramids were constructed. And it isn't like we don't understand how complex and wonderful the Egyptian society was. They played music, cultivated crops, they brewed beer, they laid out cities, played board games and stitched wounds and performed successful amputations, mastered shipbuilding and simultaneous equations. Women could own property. They developed cosmetics and perfumes. So, Brian, it's simply absurd.
Well, but at the same time,
they'd be incapable of working out the pyramids.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. You know, with all of that, of course, how could they have figured out how to stack a rock?
Yeah. How could they have worked out a sled ramp system, Brian?
Exactly.
So yeah, that one is, but what gets me, and you said this so, what you said was so perfect, and that is just how much of this is so easily disproved. This isn't even a hard reach to find, you know, in a simple archaeology text, just to go back and look. I mean, my God, Googling can just pretty much disrupt everything about this entire theory. We have found the smoking guns all over the place. I mean, we found in Hatno have been a quarry. We discovered the sled ramp system that I had mentioned that's used to transport the blocks. We've discovered post holes and a ramp with stairs on either side that shows how they literally moved these blocks up. The workers, as you mentioned, did and could take the blocks up and down steep slopes. You know, we found just recently what's amazing. There's this great documentary, and the name escapes me, but where Cairo, we've been doing a lot of construction to updated sewer systems, and they found the literal remains of ancient docks and harbors and canals. Right, that basically went from the Nile River right to the heart of the city, right. Which implies that when it crested, you know, water would rush through, and they could literally then take, you know, suggesting that they could move enormous stones hundreds of miles by stacking them on boats and simply moving them through the canals. You know, so we have all the smoking guns here. It's pathetic that this is still even something that's debated.
But you know, the aliens built the canals because that's what they had on Mars.
Now, see that now so. The fact that I hadn't thought of that, so that pretty much punctures everything. The whole need for that. Oh my God! So yeah. So like I said, with the case of the pyramids, it's just it's quite embarrassing for that one. To me, that's just so absurd because we have such a body of evidence. Again, mundane, bureaucratic evidence of how this was done, how it was achieved. Well, and again, just how interesting it was put together. Why can't we just simply be fascinated by the marvel of their own complex society than to have to invent something supernatural, right? Well,
absolutely. I mean, how cool is it that they could do that then?
Exactly.
Is it impossible? Well, obviously no. that's an easy enough answer right there.
Right? Just crazy. So, all right. So let's move on. That one is so easily just dismantled there. But let's talk about another one that's always very, I know this one has always been asserted. This one may have been one of the first ones that is just like, it's just strange enough that people always made that assertion. And those are the Moai of Easter Island, the large statues that stick there in the island. Let's discuss that one. What do you have on that one?
They're designed after aliens. And,
again, yeah. Just aliens. We need that guy on the TV show just to pop up in the podcast and just announce their aliens every time.
Well, and you know, looking at the history of those, one of the things that I always have fun with is, you know, I'll start talking about them, and people are always kind of knowledgeable about them. They know them, sure. And I always look over and go, "Do you know that they have hats?" And everybody's like, "What are you talking about?" I'm like, "Seriously, they've got hats."
You know, if anyone gets anything from this entire podcast, if that one fact can seep into the popular culture, Brian,
exactly,
we've been successful.
Well, and you know, once again, cultures across the world, art is a big thing,
right?
Iconography because of different religious beliefs, and the first thing that people do, modern people do, is look at it and they don't go, "Wow, this is an amazing feat that these people did." They say, "Well, that culture wasn't advanced enough to do that. So how did the aliens put it there?"
Right, right.
And I don't know. I would say, why do they have to blame it on the aliens? Why can't it be an advanced race that was already here? But yeah, that's there too. So I can't go too far down that rabbit hole because it is one.
Right. I know. And well, and not only that, but why doesn't it just spur the obvious questions of where to look? And going back to the Egyptian example, it's simply trying to have you formulate the premise. Fine. If this was predicated by human ingenuity and technology and engineering, let's look for evidence of that to start supporting the claim. And so much like what happened with the canals in Egypt, I think one of the big guns here in this one are archaeologists Terry Hunt and Carl Lippo, who basically started coming from the theory, again, the intelligent hypothesis that this was man-made, of course. So how could they have achieved it? So they started using radar technology to try to look for patterns of prehistoric roads. And from the position of where the certain stones were gathered all the way up to where they were put, right? And they found that the quarries and sculptors had left a lot of evidence there. They found these ancient roadways, and they found evidence of large stone statues kind of like discarded or broken along these said pathways, and even showed that the statues along the road are just designed in a way that they could kind of lean forward. And therefore, if tilted a certain way, it could easily be seen along its curved front edge that it can be manipulated to, quote, step or kind of walk. And so all the evidence they found right there pointed to an upright transportation practice, which is kind of the best theory at the moment. And there's a marvelous video that we posted on our site, on our Facebook page. I urge everyone to go to see it because it's beautiful. It's fascinating. Well, that alone of seeing how a giant stone could be moved like that, literally walked from their quarries to their final positions simply by ropes and teamwork alone, is just so fascinating and interesting and compelling. Right?
One of the things about that is the reason that they were so compelled into doing that is they found all sorts of different ways to transport those things across the country and get them in place. But all of the locals, because of their history, kept coming in and saying, no, because the legend says that they walked across the country.
That's right.
And they had to say, okay, well, let's assume that they're right. And these things were seen walking across the country. What could they interpret as seeing them walk across? And sure enough, it turns out one of the easiest ways to move them is literally to make them walk across.
It's fascinating and beautiful and romantic in and of itself, the ingenuity of that. And I urge, again, everyone to check out that video. It's on our Facebook page to show archaeologists demonstrating how this could be done. And it's just fascinating. I mean, you know, and they understand how much is tied to the respect that they have. The Moai represented ancestors with literally watching over the descendants of these peoples, which is actually one of the first reasons that they kind of realized that they were all facing inland instead of seaward originally. So they kind of realized that these are religious artifacts designed to watch over and literally embody the spirits of their deceased ancestors, which then tells you right there, well, then these are obviously made by the indigenous cultures that needed them to perform these functions, right?
Well, and you know, one of the things that I think that modern people tend to do is think based on their current knowledge. You look at something in the past and go, okay, well, you know, this went from X to Y. How would we do it? You know, well, we'd get a truck and a big lift or, you know, something. Right. And we'd do that. And they didn't have that then. And I find this with a lot of paranormal claims. People overthink things so much. And they don't rule out the simple explanations. They just never get to them in the first place.
That's so profound. That's exactly right. And it's, yeah, and frustrating, as it were, just because, again, you know, we talk a lot on the show. I think we're going to have t-shirts made up where we encourage our listeners and the public at large to always make sure you're shaving with Occam's razor, right? And
that's, exactly.
It's just, yeah, I get just as frustrated with that basic first erroneous concept as you are. Let's dive in and wrap up with our last one that's always attributed to aliens of some sort, Brian, and that is the phenomenon that is Stonehenge.
Which one?
Yeah. Well, yes, that's Stonehenge. There's let's talk about it as a whole.
Well, no, what I was going to say is which Stonehenge? I mean, there are numerous henges around
the
world.
Well, that's true. So let's talk about the Salisbury Plain Stonehenge.
Exactly. Because that's the one that got everybody's attention.
Exactly. but point taken. That's exactly right.
Yeah, that's kind of what I ask people. They're like, well, what do you think about Stonehenge? And I'm like, well, it's one of many. There were a lot of wood henges. There's not as many remnants of them because wood doesn't age that well. But, I mean, that's the thing is you have to ask yourself, once again, we're going to look at this from the perspective I was talking about earlier. So, we have a circle of rocks. Always seems to involve rocks for some reason. And they're put in, you know, this remote area. And they say that the extraterrestrials did it. Why? What is the purpose behind it? What motivated them to say, okay, people are dying of diseases, people could use, you know, medical technology, they could use transportation, they could use, you know, modern sewer systems. Right, but instead,
right. If there's a cure for childhood cancer, let's give them a calendar of the solstice.
Exactly. What cruel alien race would do that to us?
Oh.
Now, will we do it to ourselves? Yes. Why? Because we didn't have the technology to do those other things, but darn it, we understood how to stack rocks in a specific place in a specific order.
Oh, you know, you're so right there. And, you know, we have this from a historical perspective. We are woefully ignorant, not only of all ancient technology, but like specifically Neolithic technology. Like, we had shear legs. The Neolithic technology had the means to do this and were very effective at the time of moving and placing stones of a similar size, right? It's, you know, it's really not that difficult. Or even if you decide on you're going to go with the sleigh running on like tracks greased with animal fat theory, right? Even those experiments that are far less sophisticated than the shear legs showed that you can carry a 40-ton slab of stone successfully over many miles, more, you know, with just 100 workers that can do exactly. This. I mean, it's easily shown that this can be done. The other one that, too, you said it exactly right, too. Like, you know, we find that these are also fashioned. These stones are fashioned with very recognizable technology, and that's mortise and tenon joints, right? And so these exist. We saw them. And that's an ancient joint that goes back 7,000 years before Stonehenge, right? Early examples in pre-modern times are show like Germany, like pre-modern Germany and Egypt, for instance. We find them in ancient furniture from archaeological sites in the Middle East, Europe, and Asia. So not only has it been going on for that long and was so easily known, it was widespread throughout the earth.
Well, just to show you how people will ignore things like that, I mean, a famous carving that, you know, the ancient alien conspiracist will immediately jump and go, look, this person is sitting in a spaceship. It's like, no, they're sitting on, you know, kind of the equivalent of a tree of life. And it's something that is common in a lot of different carvings. But because they took it out of context on this one thing and already had advanced technology from, you know, alien civilizations on their mind, they couldn't think of, you know, why would the locals have done that for, you know, a non-extraterrestrial reason.
That's right.
They move right past the fact that, you know, it has a really simple explanation.
Well, and I think you've given our audience too, Brian, like a really great a template, like a flow chart, if you will, for the very first steps in how to achieve rationality and rational thinking when confronted with these things, right? I mean, they can easily be dissected. And I love that your common mantra to our listeners always is the first question is why? Why would this have been done, right? Who benefits? What would be the point of it all? Which everyone is so willing to just speed right past every time, which is just insane to me. And I love that, you know, that is the first basic fundamental question that needs to be asked anytime you encounter any sort of conspiracy.
I'll take that a step farther and say encounter anything. If somebody asks or poses something unusual, the first thing out of your mind should be why? What's the point? You know, even when we deal with, you know, somebody comes in and they say, well, I'll take it to my side for a minute here and say, they come in and they say, well, my house is haunted. And I know that because one night I was sitting in the living room and a book fell off the shelf. It's like, why? let's jump that shark and say that the ghosts exist. What was the point of it throwing a book off the shelf in the middle of the night? I mean, if it has that ability, couldn't it, like, communicate with you to pass on whatever knowledge that it wanted? No, it's just going to pick a book off a shelf. So that in examining any kind of claim, you really need to just step back and go, okay, what's the motivation? Why did it do it?
Exactly. And again, like last thing I said, you know, for our listeners too, you know, Brian does these wonderful lectures on just rational and skeptical thinking and trying to employ the scientific method when engaging in any sort of research of any kind, whether it's paranormal research or any type of research. And they're marvelous. And, you know, Brian, tell us a little bit about your website and where they can go to kind of look and kind of find out where they could see you do some of these talks.
Come over to RockyMountainParanormal.com, and we have all sorts of fun and or exciting things to look at, different paranormal claims that we've investigated over the years. And because one podcast just isn't enough, I have the Do You Like Scary Movies podcast, which quite literally is horror podcast. Anything to do with the topic of scary movies, scary books, scary music, scary anything. It's all there. And we are literally pushing out our first podcast here in the next day or so.
That is fantastic and highly endorsed by this podcast as well. I can tell anyone from personal experience knowing Brian is such an amazing benefit. It's literally what took me to suddenly finding myself at 2 a.m. in a small turret of the Croke Patterson Mansion in downtown Denver, right? Realizing, yeah, this is what I'm doing tonight. I mean, we're in here investigating a house, and I couldn't ask for anything else. It's amazing knowing you and knowing what you do and how important it is. So thank you for that. And I think, again, as we wrap up here, just kind of leaving to our audience, this is kind of one of our more compact episodes in a way, because it is just so easily debunked. And so, you know, it doesn't take much to just Google and research and read and watch the correct things to understand how easily all of this is debunked and how ludicrous it all is. What we then want to leave you with again is to just remind you that whenever you encounter pseudo-archaeological denialists, whatever their claimed intentions, no matter how innocuous they claim that their indulgence in these theories are, they are, always remember this, in practice, choosing to revoke agency and skill from ancient non-Western civilizations rather than to recognize the intellectual ownership and legacy of the civilization itself. So these denialists literally would rather attribute the accomplishments of ancient civilizations to literal aliens who have not been proven to exist, which is not only just racist, we say for the last time again, but amounts to a literal theft of history and the historical record. And it is our jobs as gatekeepers of rationality and skepticism, you, the listeners of this podcast, our fellow travelers on this journey, to try to fight that whenever we can. So we really thank you for listening and joining us on this episode and taking on a subject that I know gets us riled up, and we hope you enjoyed it too, and that you will do your best to evangelize and try to dispel this whenever you come across it, no matter how, you know, innocuous you think it is or how genteel someone is when mentioning it to you. Do your duty. Do your due diligence and stand up for something that's so obviously incorrect and terrible. So we thank you again for listening. And as always, for joining us on this podcast. Brian, what are we taking on next episode?
Oh, just because we hate ourselves. next time we will be taking on, as much as we can in this short little hour that we have, reptilians.
Reptilians, yes. So. And what the reptilians have been up to.
Well, a lot lately.
They are always up to a lot, aren't
exactly.
they?
Exactly.
So fantastic. We urge you all again to thank you for listening. Share this podcast with any friends and families or people in your life that you think might enjoy it. As always, look for this podcast everywhere your favorite podcasts are found. Like and follow our Facebook page to get more little tidbits of information, including this wonderful video that you can play at home to see a giant statue walking across the countryside for yourself. And as always, thank you for being a part of the They That It podcast. Thank you for joining us.